about the film programs that we're going to have. I hesitate to start without my colleague, but I'll turn the gavel over to him as soon as he comes in. So we're starting with legacy money overview and with Michelle Mitchell, the Executive Budget Officer of MMB. Tell us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Mitchell. I'm the Executive Budget Officer at Minnesota Management and Budget, and I work on the Natural Resources and Environment area. Today, I'm going to give you a high-level overview of the legacy funds. And I realize that the laptop is way far away, so excuse me for one moment here. So as you all know, the legacy funds were established in 2008 by constitutional amendment by Minnesota voters. The sales taxes from that amendment raised 0.375%. These funds are projected to annually raise between $240 and $300 million annually. And over the past 4 years, over $1 billion has been appropriated. Now, this additional sales tax gets split out four ways, into the Outdoor Heritage Fund, Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails Fund, and Arts and Cultural Heritage. Now, on the far right column, you'll see projected sales tax revenue. This reflects the November forecast, excuse me. The February forecast will be available soon. So the purpose of these funds, as you know, are varied, but it all goes to protecting, restoring what is important to Minnesotans. So for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, its main purpose is to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. Clean Water is focusing on water quality issues related to surface water, groundwater, and drinking water sources. Parks and Trails supports parks and trails of regional or statewide significance. And Arts and Cultural Heritage is for arts, arts education, arts access, and preserving Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. The top four recipients of these funds are four state agencies. The top is the Department of Natural Resources. They receive about 40%, which is made up of a combination of outdoor heritage, clean water, parks and trails funding. Second in line is Board of Water and Soil Resources. They receive about 15%, which is a combination of outdoor heritage and clean water funds. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency receives about 9%, which is made up of clean water funds. And the State Arts Board receives about 9%, made up of arts and cultural heritage monies. So now let's turn to how these appropriations are made. They're slightly different for each of the funds. And starting with outdoor heritage, recommendations are made by the SARD-SAMS Outdoor Heritage Council. This council was created in statute, and it's a 12-member group, 8 public members, and 4 legislators. This council makes recommendations directly to the legislature, who then appropriates the funds. What's unique about the Outdoor Heritage Fund is that it's normally made on a one-time annual appropriations, whereas the other funds typically make biennial appropriations. Next is clean water. These recommendations are made by the Clean Water Council, and the Clean Water Council was created actually prior to the Legacy Amendment. It was created after the 2006 Clean Water Legacy Act, and the purpose of that act was to protect, restore, and preserve the quality of Minnesota's surface water. The Legacy Amendment then added groundwater and drinking water. This 28-member group is made up of 19 governor appointees, 4 non-voting legislators, and 5 non-voting agency representatives. The agencies on the council are the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, Department of Natural Resources, and Bowser. The governor typically makes amended recommendations or takes the recommendations of the council, and then the legislature appropriates the funds. And again, this is on a biennial one-time basis. What's slightly new this year for the Parks and Trails Fund is that for the fiscal year 14-15 biennium, the legislature directed the commissioner of DNR to convene and facilitate a 9-member work group to develop a consensus recommendation for the allocation of the Parks and Trails funding. The Parks and Trails funding is allocated into 3 systems: the state Parks and Trails administered by DNR, the 7-county metro area Parks and Trails administered by Metropolitan Council, and outstate parks coordinated by Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. This legacy group made recommendations through fiscal year 19. However, the governor made recommendations for the following biennium, fiscal years 14 and 15, and the legislature typically makes biennial recommendations also. And finally, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which is slightly different, has no central advisory group. The legislature hears requests from many organizations on specific appropriations, and you'll be hearing some shortly. While this is the case, the lead organizations for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund are the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Minnesota Historical Society, and the Minnesota Center for the Humanities. And the governor typically does not make recommendations on these funds. Now let's briefly look at how spending is tracked with these appropriations. So what I think legacy funds really highlight is the difference between appropriations, which the legislature makes, and how those funds are actually expended. While the various agencies are appropriated legacy funding, the availability of each appropriation for each project or program tends to vary greatly, and expenditures could happen outside of the biennium for which they're appropriated. So, for example, a project funded by Outdoor Heritage Funds for fiscal year 13 could be available through fiscal year 15, for example, or if those funds are also receive federal funds, that appropriation could be extended to as long as the federal funds are. Now, the main concern, I think, is that the funds that are already appropriated, you don't want to reappropriate those. So what happens is that agencies track by the projects and programs individually. Additionally, the legislature, the LCC, the Legislative Coordinating Commission, maintains the Minnesota's Legacy website that includes information on the status of each of these projects. MMB's focus tends to be on the appropriation and spending of funds at the fund and agency level, not at the project and program level. And in the consolidated fund statements that MMB releases, we assume that the expenditures happen in the biennium in which they're appropriated. So, for example, for fiscal years 12 and 13, we show all of the expenditures happening over 12 and 13, not going forward. However, expenditures can happen throughout all of those out years. MMB has also put out guidance on legacy fund expenditures to assist state agencies in accounting for their expenditure of legacy dollars. Now, one thing that I can't get away with without saying is we recommend between a 5 and 10% reserve to maintain the solvency of legacy funds. Because of the potential volatile nature of sales tax collections, coupled with the majority of estimated revenue being appropriated, this puts pressure on the fund's bottom lines. And by law, agencies can spend all of their appropriations, even if the sales tax revenue is lower than estimated. So on a budgetary basis, all the legacy funds remain balanced. However, the cash position of the funds may require periodic monitoring depending on the levels of sales tax collections. So with that, we recommend between 5 and 10% of the estimated sales tax receipts be kept on reserve. And this provides a safeguard then against possible fluctuation in sales tax collections and maintains the solvency of the funds. So with that, I will open it up to any questions, but just want to again reiterate that the February forecast will be available likely within the next week. If you have any other questions or need other information, feel free to visit our website or contact me directly.
I think because of the fullness of our agenda, I think we know we'll have you back before both committees, and I think we'll skip questions to you at this time. I also want to announce that we're going to shift from the program. We're going to bring, because the investment people are from out of town, we're going to put them first and then the Minnesota Film Board overview. We're hoping to fit everything in today, but we know we can get back to the Film Board people if we run out of time to do them today. So we want to start with the investment people, and Denise Gardner from the entertainment attorney is going to introduce them. We do apologize. We didn't end up getting Josh Hartner, and someone else can explain why that's happened. But let's get the people.
We got his lookalike.
Okay. I think.
Not quite.
Thank you. Denise will start us off and introduce people, and they'll tell us what their proposals are.
What is this week?
Distributed.
Oh.
Yes.
I think we're having the pages pass those out. I just want to make sure everybody has one.
Okay. Yeah, I think everyone has.
Okay, great.
I've got one.
I've got one.
You got one? Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Representative Phyllis Kahn and Representative Dean Erdahl, for organizing this committee
and
session
Senator
today.
Senator Cohen,
of course. My name is Denise Gardner, and I am here along with my colleagues Robert Schwartz, who sits to my left, Jane Minton, and Ralph Winter, to talk about the motion picture business. But more specifically, we're here today to discuss some legislation that we believe will give Minnesota a real seat at the table when it comes to the business of motion pictures. I'd like for everybody on this committee right now to take a look at the film revenue chart that we just handed out. And what you see on that chart are major motion pictures that have been filmed here in Minnesota, mostly done for budgets at or around $20 million. And you're probably pretty familiar with the titles. You might even know people who were involved in these productions. At the far right column of that chart, we did our research and we did the arithmetic, and we illustrated a hypothetical case. We asked ourselves, and then we answered, what would the state of Minnesota's financial return have been had it had a $3 million investment stake in each of these films? And as you can see, the answer to that question is quite remarkable, given that those numbers reflect what the state of Minnesota's return would be after its initial recoupment. So I want to kick off today's hearing with this fundamental question. Why shouldn't the state of Minnesota benefit financially from films that are produced here? The short answer is that it can benefit financially. There is no good reason why it shouldn't. The truth is that for the last 30 years, we have not had the collection of intellectual capital, the organizations, or the professional facilities in place to enable Minnesota to own a piece of films like Grumpy Old Men, Mighty Ducks, or Fargo. But today, that can all change. My colleagues have flown here from Los Angeles to explain to you in detail how this can all be and show us why it would be prudent to take advantage of this unique opportunity. But first, let me briefly introduce each of them. I should say that Robert, Ralph, Jane, and I are prepared, and we're here especially to answer all of your questions at the end of each of our brief presentations. Robert Schwartz, to my left, a former Minnesotan, is a founding member of the Independent Feature Project and was principally involved in creating the original Minnesota Film and TV Board. In fact, he produced a film for the Minnesota Film Board which explains what the Film Board is and does. We won't watch it today, but just wanted you to know we have it. He has served on various other Minnesota boards, including the Illusion Theater. Robert has lectured at numerous colleges and universities around the nation and is a member of the Producers Guild of America, not Minnesota. But then 20 years ago, Robert relocated to Los Angeles and produced Iron Will for Walt Disney Pictures, starring Kevin Spacey and Mackenzie Astin. Iron Will went on to become Disney's most successful live-action picture of the year. Under his Wardenclyffe Entertainment banner, Robert ran the development and production of numerous mid-budget films, including the Lionsgate Films release of Woolly Boys, starring Peter Fonda and Kris Kristofferson, Virginia's Run, directed by Emmy-nominated Peter Markle and starring Gabriel Byrne and Joanne Whaley-Kilmer, and Dave Barry's Complete Guide to Guys, written and directed by Jeff Arch from Sleepless in Seattle, and starring Dave Barry, John Cleese, and Dan Marino. Schwartz also produced the highly profitable MGM UA direct-to-video releases Kart Racer, starring Randy Quaid, and the award-winning movie Blizzard, directed by LeVar Burton, and starring Whoopi Goldberg, Kevin Pollak, Brenda Bleven, and Christopher Plummer. Robert was the executive producer of 44 episodes of the highly successful and acclaimed PBS series J.J. the Jet Plane. Robert is currently developing and will produce the critically acclaimed novel Mockingbird, written by Walter Tevis, who wrote The Hustler, Color of Money, and The Man Who Fell to Earth, as well as the international best-selling Paulo Coelho novel The Alchemist for Warner Brothers and The Weinstein Company. Ralph Winter, at the far left, has produced six films since the year 2000 that have proven to be some of the most profitable films in the industry, grossing collectively over $2.1 billion in worldwide box office. Ralph is a native Californian born and raised in Glendale. He collaborated with 20th Century Fox in 1999, producing Marvel's X-Men, directed by Bryan Singer. Upon realizing the profitability and achievement of the film, Fox offered Mr. Winter a deal with the studio, through which he went on to produce Planet of the Apes, X-Men 2, and X-Men The Last Stand, Fantastic Four, and Fantastic Four, The Rise of the Silver Surfer. Prior to his tenure at Fox, Mr. Winter worked at Disney, where he produced the remake of the 1949 RKO classic Mighty Joe Young with producer Tom Jacobson and director Ron Underwood from City Slickers. The following year, he executive produced Inspector Gadget, starring Matthew Broderick and Rupert Everett. Mr. Winter has also worked in the independent arena, producing the film Hackers, starring Angelina Jolie, and directed by the critically acclaimed Ian Softley, K-Pak's Skeleton Key for United Artists. He also executive produced Captain Ron, starring Kurt Russell and Martin Short, Hocus Pocus, starring Sarah Jessica Parker and Bette Midler, The Puppet Masters at Disney, Star Trek V and VI for Paramount, and the television show High Incident for Steven Spielberg and ABC. Jane Minton is the founding executive director of IFP Minnesota, Independent Feature Project Minnesota, and until recently, she led that organization for 25 years. During that time, she developed nationally recognized programs such as the McKnight Fellowships for Filmmakers, Independence in Flight, Cinema Lounge, Minnesota TV, the Fiscal Sponsorship Program, and the Youth Media Program. At present, she's producing the film Public Domain, written and directed by Patrick Coyle. Prior to IFP Minnesota, Jane worked as Director of Development for Intermedia Arts. She served as a panelist for several foundations and grantors, including the Jerome Foundation, the Minnesota State Arts Board, Metro Regional Arts Council, and she served as a reader for the National Endowment for the Arts Fast Track Challenge Grant. She's on the boards of IFP National.
Was
on the boards of KFP, IFP National, KFAI Community Radio, Zeitgeist, and International Television Association, where she was the board president from 88 to 89. And that leaves me, Denise Gardner. I'm a licensed attorney here in Minnesota. I own a commercial and video production facility in Northeast Minneapolis, where I've run my production company, F-Stop Productions, for the last 10 years. I've worked as a series associate producer for HGTV, the Do-It-Yourself Network, and the History Channel. I've also been a part of some show development at Twin Cities Public Television, creating new programming strands for their national production division. Published author of magazine articles in the book The Beatles, A One-Night Stand. I'm currently in development of a 3D IMAX picture on the underwater caves of the Yucatan, among other projects. So with that, I hand over to my good colleague here, Robert Schwartz.
Mr. Schwartz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me. I want to start by telling you that we've worked on this plan for over a year, but actually the plan started probably 20 years ago, and I was telling them that I was making Iron Will for Walt Disney Pictures, and was being pushed by the Disney studios to do the picture in Canada. Even at that time, and even more so now, Canada had a program, the exact same program that runs today, but with more money, $375 million now, a program that was dragging us across the border. And Iron Will certainly would have been shot in Winnipeg had it not been for one small element. My huge desire to do the movie in the place that it actually took place and where the finish line actually was. And also the railroads. For anybody that's seen that movie, there are 54 days of shooting on a train. And there are three trains, steam locomotives in that picture. And the governor at the time helped me solve the ownership of the railroad tracks. And so I could move three trains around that had to be filled with coal 24 hours a day so that they wouldn't freeze in place. I bother to tell you the story because the battle of keeping the film in Minnesota was huge. And it was tough. And I was a much younger filmmaker at the time, much younger producer, and just barely won that battle. And it brings me to today. It's exactly why I love what this program is that we're going to present to you, because it works in a complementary fashion with two organizations that I had my hands in helping to create, the Minnesota Film and Television Board and the Independent Feature Project that Jane ran for 25 years. And this is truly the third leg of a tripod. Instead of a program that waits for movies to come to this state, this is a program that is designed to go after movies and target them and invest a small amount of money in them to bring them back to spend their money on everything that you can imagine a movie has within the state. So with that, I want to do two things as my part of this, and that's tell you what AMP is and also tell you how it works. AMP is the Association of Minnesota Motion Pictures. It's a 501c6 nonprofit organization. AMP's mission is to develop and stimulate Minnesota's economic role in global motion picture industry by investing funds at targeted motion pictures and in turn bringing those projects here to shoot in Minnesota. AMP envisions Minnesota's local film businesses, independent contractors, the film industry, extensive base of Minnesota businesses, and individual artists deriving widespread economic benefits from movie production that is contracted to work by utilizing this funding. This is AMP. I'm sure the big question in your mind is, how does it work? AMP works in a really simple, direct way, though the process of selecting and contracting movies to fund is a complex and sophisticated one. And I wish I could say it was our idea and that we were just brilliant. But this plan is all over the world. And there are funds in from Australia to China to the UK that have funds as small as $20 million to funds that are $300 and $400 million. As an example, China just set up an office in Los Angeles. They have $300 million to attract movies to bring them to China. And they will have more money than that. On top of the kind of money that Canada has, and you've probably heard stories about Canada and films going across the Minnesota border that shoot there, they have funds in almost every province of Canada, much like our states, which have none at this point in the investment side. They have battles between the provinces. So British Columbia has one, Ontario, they all have funds to try to steer that on top of the national funds and the incentives and the tax credits. It's quite extraordinary and a lot of money. I've produced three movies and a television series that were made in Canada, and to take advantage of these funding investments along with the credits. When I was producing Iron Will, which I mentioned the story to you, I had to fight Disney for that process, and that is what brought me to this moment in time. It's 20 years ago. Here we are now, and these funds vary a bit in between how they actually function, but they all are doing the same thing, which is to draw the production to the state or to the location, the country, the state, the province, and get them to directly invest. By funding AMP at a reasonable level so that several movies can be financed a year, producers and production companies will naturally approach AMP to secure funding for their projects. AMP will be a significant financial resource for these companies, providing an ongoing interest in working together. In turn, AMP will aggressively search out the best movie projects from the top producers, boutique production companies, and major studios in Los Angeles, New York, and elsewhere. This is a complex task, as I said, and AMP will assemble a selection committee with the likes of people like Ralph Winter and Jane and Denise, and make direct connections with these long-term relationships that we've had for decades. AMP will also use key talent agencies that you've probably heard of, Creative Artists, ICM, William Morris Endeavor, to help vet projects, to literally look for projects that can be shot in Minnesota. Well, and these projects can be shot in other locations too, but we will have the agencies be looking for us, so we'll be going after those projects. In our respective companies, production companies in Los Angeles, Ralph and I review hundreds of projects each and every year. And as you can guess, we pass on most of these projects because they're missing an element. They're missing an actor or a director or a financial element. And sometimes we work to add that element like a director or something to the project. But if the project doesn't have all of its elements, then it doesn't move forward and it doesn't get produced. And this is exactly how we designed AMP. We had designed it ensuring that any project that AMP considers for funding will have to contain a full and complete set of elements. I want to take a few minutes to go over that list of key criteria with you so that you'll understand how thorough this process is going to be and what a project will actually need to be considered by the selection committee. These requirements are not just for the AMP selection committee. They're actually built into the bill before you and they to ensure the compliance. A film project may receive funding from AMP only if the application includes a final shooting script, a final budget, a final schedule with a producer, a director, and principal cast already under contract. This full package of elements all on board are necessary to even apply for funds from AMP. And the best projects will be the projects that can actually attract these elements. So you have the best script attracting the best director, and that in turn attracts the best actors, and you end up with a package that is the beginning stages of our process. All the funding for the film, other than the funding that's being requested by AMP, will actually already have to be in place. So we're the last stop in the chain. And that means that we're last money in, which means we can utilize, AMP will utilize the due diligence that's done by these other funders, and we will do our own due diligence on that film project as well, which will include sales estimates and pre-sale agreements to different countries and what the repayment terms are from the other funders. The amount of funding requested from AMP may not be more than 50% of the total direct budget. We will never be the only financer on a project, and most of the time the percentage will be considerably less. It's a smarter, more conservative approach, and the advantage to this part of the process is that we will be putting a little bit of money into a larger number of pictures, cross-collateralizing our risk on more pictures. This, by the way, is exactly what the studios are doing. So you have companies like Fox Searchlight and Sony Classics and Focus Features that are assembling a few funders on each picture and sharing the risk over a larger number of movies. And it is exactly this idea that we're doing in reverse for the state of Minnesota. So we intend to ally with these production companies to put in that last piece and get them to bring the picture to Minnesota. The film has a documented distribution agreement in place through a distributor that AMP determines is well-known and well-respected. This is a huge, huge item on this list. And I say that because most of what is known in the independent film circles are, and maybe some of you have known or been involved in financing an independent film. And these films are put together and made, and by the time they're finished, they're pushed off to go to a festival to try to get distribution. And Jane will, I'm sure, speak more about this. But the part I want you to understand is that these are very different types of projects with an inherently different level of risk. And they should be made. The IFP Minnesota and Minnesota Film and Television Board are doing a great job supporting these small independent films. But AMP will be doing something quite different with a wholly separate connection and transaction in the motion picture industry. It will both drive and feed these organizations with more opportunities. Let's go on to the last few requirements, and I'll be quick on this part. The applicant for funding has documented what Minnesota-based personnel, businesses, locations, and other activities will be used in the production of the film. Requiring this information up front will let the selection committee get a clear picture of what monies are to be spent in Minnesota and what goods and services will be utilized. We were in a earlier meeting, and I brought up a piece of information is that on an average film that is $5 million that we would potentially put in $2 or $2.5 million, the average number that they would spend in the state would be $2.7 million. And it could be higher, it could be a little lower, but that's average. So you can see that the investment in the film is going to come back into the state in all types of goods and services. The applicant for funding guarantees credit on the film for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It's an important credit, and Minnesota's presence and potentially will be seen by millions of people around the world, on top of seeing the locations in the state of Minnesota that actually will truly bolster tourism. And lastly, AMP ensures that a majority of the funds allocated for each film project will actually be spent in the state of Minnesota. This is a primary goal of AMP and will truly be a natural byproduct of making the movie, of selecting the movie to be working in Minnesota. Not uncommon for movie projects, as I described to you my experience in having a film almost go to Canada, this happens every day where producers have a script that is written for one location and they decide to go to Canada to shoot it, and Toronto has been shot for New York City an unlimited number of times. So this attraction, this actually works where you put money in a picture and it comes and they rewrite it for Minnesota. So this is what AMP is, this is how it works, and I want to tell you another really quick short story, or actually an example of a picture that is a real world story with Ralph Winter and I. We recently optioned a script together that was at Universal, and we set the picture up at 20th Century Fox. It has a director because Ralph has worked with Fox for over a decade, went to a very A-list director, probably the most well-known director on the 20th Century Fox lot, and his name is Sean Levy. And Sean has produced Night at the Museum and Real Steel, and his pictures, each of those pictures, has made over $100 million. With that level of talent already, a script, Ralph and I, the best producers you could possibly have, Sean Levy attached to direct, with a producer and a director that both know actors like Hugh Jackman and have worked with them, it is easily conceivable to pick up the phone and make a phone call to these people. The distribution, of course, will be handled by Fox. And this is a road trip movie. It's a family road trip movie, and it's hilarious. And there is no reason in the world. This will probably shoot in several locations in the United States. And there's absolutely no reason that part of this picture can't shoot in Minnesota. And the idea of investing a small amount, $2 or $3 million, and having that picture be brought here to really re-spend that $2 or $3 million back into the state, and then owning a part of that picture for whatever happens in the marketplace, is truly the concept of AMP. And now I want to turn it over to Ralph, who has graciously given his time to come here in the middle of a very hectic schedule, in the middle of winter, and to come meet with you and talk about what AMP will mean from a Hollywood business perspective and around the world.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shorts. Mr. Winter.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's good to get out of the cold of L.A. thank you for your time. I think that we're aware that the movie business is a global business. Everyone is competing for rebates and credits and for putting the most on the screen. And it's become somewhat a flavor of the month business, where this week it's New Mexico, and then it's Shreveport, and then it's Detroit. In the X-Men movies that I produced over the past 10 years, we did the first one in Toronto, then we did two more in Vancouver, then we did the fourth one in Sydney, and the next one is going to shoot in Montreal. Producers are constantly chasing and finding the best package of financial incentives and resources that help them get the most on the screen. And unfortunately, it's become the out-of-town business. I'd rather make movies and sleep in my own bed. But there are tremendous opportunities that are out there, and competing for that is competing for international and global business. I think the uniqueness of the plan of what is being presented offers an opportunity to recoup your investment. There are no guarantees in the film business. But why not, if you're going to offer a rebate or a credit and attract and entice filmmakers here in the state and from out of state to come here, that you don't have the opportunity to earn back that investment? I think that's a tremendous opportunity, and it distinguishes you from any of the other programs that are being offered in the United States. And I think it works well with the credits and rebates that you already offer. The combined package is what is going to get attention. You have the beginnings and the history of a film community and an infrastructure here, and those are the kinds of things, along with your location, to attract film investment and filmmakers. I think also, you know, at the right amount, you know, and I've been talking about $25 to $30 million in terms of showing in the Hollywood community that you're serious about making investment and becoming a partner. And I think that you can go in and ask and tell them that you're going to spend $1 or $2 million, but it probably doesn't get the same kind of attention at CAA or WME or Paramount or Fox to begin and be considered a serious player about investing in their movies and helping them put that package together. So I think that at the right amount, whether it's over a year or two, doesn't matter, I think that it has the opportunity to get attention of all these players. You can see even in the Oscar-nominated films this last year how many of them were cobbled together independently, where lots of different companies put that money up. It wasn't exclusively put up by the studios. And I think that's the opportunity. The tentpole movies are, you know, less and less of those being made by the studios, and the gap being filled for an older audience that wants to go to the movies, it's not just kids anymore, tends to be movies that are put together by independent companies. So in my own business, I've got three or four movies that I'm putting together at the moment, and a couple of those could be shot here. I'm putting together a picture on the story of Ashley Smith, this young woman who was kidnapped in Atlanta 5 years ago, and eventually talked her way out because she read a section of a very popular book, The Purpose-Driven Life, to the killer and talked him into letting her go and giving himself up. The marketing advantage of that book, that author, that woman who is the poster child for 23,000 Celebrate Recovery groups, is a movie that is slated to shoot in Atlanta, but it could shoot here. It's a $5 million movie. It has that possibility of coming here. Oddly enough, we're working on a picture with Korea about the Korean War, and we've written a screenplay, the writer of Gladiator, to create a global movie. And ironically, it's actually cheaper to shoot that movie here in the United States and in North America. And one of the issues that we have is about the Korean War in terms of the snow. Guess what you have here? We had actually been looking at Utah to do that. We could be doing that here in Minnesota, that portion of that movie. And then finally, we have a small $2 million movie. We're putting the financing together. We have $500,000 of that package now. That movie could shoot in any small town in America. Again, that's the kind of movie that could shoot almost any season. and any place. And I think this kind of package offered, it gets the attention of producers like myself and production companies in Los Angeles. So I think that it's a unique program. I think that it will distinguish you. And, again, potentially no guarantees. It has the opportunity for you to recoup a portion, if not all, of your investment.
I think we'll have.
Jane.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think
Representative Khan.
We need to compress things a little bit because we have to get some questions, and then we do also have to bring the film board section on, too. So we need to sort of move things along.
I'll speed it up.
But Representative Hausman, we'll get to you right after that, okay?
Okay. Good afternoon. Thank you for providing this time to talk about the film industry and Minnesota's role in it. I've been working with media artists in the state of Minnesota for over 30 years, and for 25 of those years it was through the nonprofit organization I ran, Independent Feature Project, IFP Minnesota. Over this time, the dual roles that filmmakers must play to succeed with their goal of creating films has increased in the sophistication. First and foremost, they have to be visionary, unique, and superb storytellers. And then in addition to that, they have to be professional in their execution and worlds of leadership and marketing and financing. As the competition and demands upon filmmakers and the industry increase, the Minnesota film industry over the years has responded with organizations like the Minnesota Film and Television Board and IFP Minnesota. The Film Board was created 30 years ago, and IFP was created 25 years ago, and both provide programs. IFP created programs to teach the art and business of filmmaking, and I was proudly part of that effort. Both organizations continue to exist and execute their missions. However, while Minnesota was one time a leader in attracting films to be made in the state, we're behind now in this competitive global marketplace. We've fallen behind. Other countries, states, provinces have established film financing programs. We've talked about that to keep their areas, their regions robust. AMP, the Association of Minnesota Motion Pictures, is now prepared to do the same with the following results. Number one, jobs. One of the investment requirements is to spend the funds in the state that we invest. This can be jobs, hotels, catering, car rentals, post-production services. It's a cash infusion into our businesses in the state. AMP envisions Minnesota's local film businesses, equipment vendors, contractors, and crew base deriving widespread economic benefit from this. Yesterday I received this note. Dear Jane, it looks like we have a few friends in common, and I was just sent an article from the Star Trib that mentions your filmmaking initiative in Minneapolis. I could not be more thrilled. I am a producer and camera op in New York, and I have been begging for Minnesota to bring me home for years. I would love to help with anything that you may need or just get involved in helping generate more film production in Minnesota. Let me know what I can do. Feel free to read our bios at her website. Thanks, Nicole Cosgrove. Her film credits include Arbitrage, The Dictator, A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas, and The Chronicles of Narnia. I've seen most of those. Two, film culture and industry. Minnesota currently has a micro-budget film culture. Films with budgets of $25,000, $50,000, sometimes even $500,000 are made on a semi-regular basis. With budgets of this size, these projects are a labor of love. And people don't get paid, or if they do, it's a small stipend for days and weeks of work. And don't get me wrong, I love these projects and I love these filmmakers. I've worked with them for a long, long time. But there's not an economic benefit for the state. There are no taxes or hotel rooms or payrolls occurring. The projects that do attract investment have a tough time of it. AMP is here to raise the bar with our indigenous film community through fostering projects to the level of successful applications. The organization will invest in projects with viable business plans. In turn, these projects will produce works in the state of Minnesota and come into contact with our businesses, our communities, and vendors and talent and crew. While the bar is high, AMP intends to be successful with these funds, and we have created a unique path for Minnesota producers to also have the opportunity to apply for these funds while still maintaining our high standards. We intend to work with the Minnesota film community as much as we do the national and international film community with these investments. Additionally, because we intend to work with experienced, highly qualified consultants on these projects, these projects that AMP and the state of Minnesota become associated with will encourage other investors, venture capitalists, and wealth managers to participate in these film projects here. Finally, our film culture will further develop here in the state. We have a legacy of film in Minnesota. We've already discussed today the names of numerous films shot in Minnesota in the late 80s and early 90s that put us on the map, films such as Purple Rain, which now brings hordes of fans still to the nightclub First Avenue, where key scenes were shot, and Fargo, which created a fondness for the Minnesota accent. I don't know what they're talking about. Other films, Thin Ice, Prairie Home Companion, Into Temptation, North Country, Sweetland, and A Serious Mind. These are titles that have made it into the lexicon of Minnesota films. Anyone that sat in the theater during a screening of A Serious Mind by the Coen brothers. Serious Man, did I say mind?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Serious Man. anyone who sat in the theater during a screening of A Serious Man, and experienced with an audience the hilarity that ensued when the attorney Ron Meshbecher is brought up, understands that there's a connection to be made when you see these films with your fellow Minnesota citizens. It validates us. It connects us. Through AMP, we have the means to continue to build the Minnesota legacy of film and to build upon it. This is a legacy that will continue to impact us, our future generations, and it's attainable right now. And not only is it attainable, it's reimbursable. As my three companions have outlined already, legacy funds will be repaid to the state and to the legacy fund. We intend to carefully place these funds in great projects with viable business plans so that the funds come back, and we make sure that that happens. So to wind it up, through our proposed project, AMP will provide benefits to the state of Minnesota in the beginning by requiring that the amount of money that we invest will be spent in the state on the project we're investing in, creating an economic boost. In the end, by requiring that the fund be paid back, and also it will add to the state's legacy and culture of film. Thank you very much.
Okay, we do need to move a little bit. I know we have two questions here from Representative Hausman and then Representative McDonald, and then we do want to bring the film board up. But if there are any specific questions for these people now, we need to get to it. Representative Hausman?
Well, Madam Chair, maybe I'm missing something, and the two co-chairs have a lot of experience. As I just looked at the couple of lines of the bill, the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development shall enter into an agreement with the Association of Minnesota Motion Pictures, a not-for-profit organization. We name them. We don't describe them in such a way that might give the department some leeway to establish and administer a film production investment program. Upon entering into the agreement, the commissioner must transfer the annual appropriation. And I was trying to figure out, well, what that annual appropriation would be. And I first saw a suggestion, maybe that was $3 million. I heard maybe two pictures a year, but then I heard that might be too small to get attention of the folks we needed to get attention. I heard an amount of $25 to $30 million. But here's the question. this is we talk about investment in children or investment in infrastructure or something, but this is sort of a different investment. This sounds more like an investment in the stock market, where sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. But in this case, we are always dealing with taxpayer money. So a producer in the film industry might take a risk and choose to take a risk. But in this case, what we're saying is the taxpayer takes the risk. Some films will make money and some won't. There are hundreds of films, and a few of them become successful.
Likely that more money would be spent here than would go out in the grant at all. I think it's almost guaranteed when you look at the. I see my producer guys nodding when you put that together. And the other thing is that in general we don't ask Legacy to pay back anything in terms of profit and so forth. But I'll let Representative Erdahl, who's kind of the father.
Madam Chair, first of all, there is no bill as such that's been introduced on this. This is a proposal, and certainly changes, it's not been introduced. And certainly changes can be made. I think, the involvement of DEED needs to be more clarification on how, because I do think that you just turn it over to a nonprofit to make investments without deed oversight, could lead to some problems. But in a larger sense, and I've kind of been explaining it this way several times today,
that best case scenario, we get our investment back and we get a percentage of the profit of the film. Now, worst case scenario, it doesn't make money. Now, we, as Representative Kahn was saying, give out grants in many fashions. very least, if we grant money out under this as an investment, I think we have put enough criteria in here to guarantee that they're going to make the movie, whether it makes money or not, in terms of profit. But when they make the movie, they are hiring and paying carpenters, caterers, electricians, all kinds of people in Minnesota. The money is turning over. The economy is turning over. And so there will be, even in a worst-case scenario, a realization of money being returned to the state of Minnesota.
I guess I'd like to go to Representative McDonald, then quickly go to the film board. As always, we've miscalculated our time.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is for Mr. Winters or Mr. Schultz. Question on the some of the ideas. Out of respect for the chair, no bill really has been dropped in the House side. Ideas are formulating right now. I can testify to I'm from Wright County, which is a very conservative district, most conservative in the state, so we're very careful of spending taxpayer dollars, and we certainly have heard, hey, what are you giving tax money to Hollywood bigwigs? They make plenty of billions of dollars. Well, that was question was squelched and answered when the movie, A Simple Plan, was filmed in Delano, right in front of my studio, where I had an Academy Award-winning performance. If you missed it, it was 6 seconds long. But you can freeze it on DVD. It's high def.
And you have, right?
Yeah, and I have, indeed. And then Grumpy Old Men, also filmed in Lake Rebecca, just close to Delano. So I have witnessed the economic impact that it has to the community. You can kind of throw away the fluff and stuff of Hollywood in your town. That's pretty cool, actually. And the excitement of a small town. But the economic impact was quite substantial. So I would have to say that some of my constituents in Wright County sent me down and said, hey, if you can have some incentives of the snow bait kind of program that was in the 80s and 90s and bring film back, that would be a good thing. So we have an idea that is it's kind of like snow bait on blizzards, or on steroids. I call it blizzard bait. Offers incentives. So the question is, because I know we have the film board we want to get to, and Ann Shapiro and Andrew Peterson are good friends of mine, too. Question for Mr. Schultz and Mr. Winters is this.
Glasses at my age now. In the state of Massachusetts, its economic impact was $1 billion to the economy. Pennsylvania was $768 million. Georgia was $770 million. Transformers brought in from the state of Illinois, $24 million. Out of all the incentives, what is the most incentive that would incentivize a company to film here in Minnesota? Would be a 25% in-state spending rebate, or a grants, or tax credits, or transferables, or refundables? What mechanism is best used? And I'll just end with this. We are careful. We have to be careful in spending the taxpayer dollars, especially when it comes to a profit for-profit industry. We have to not show favor to one business and not another. Our local Minnesota business will say, what are you giving them credit for and not us? So we have to be very careful. But in some of the rebates and the tax incentives, once they invested 100% of their film or a portion of it in Minnesota, we give them back a portion of their investment. So but for, we wouldn't have that business anyway. So a question then for you, Mr. Schwartz or Mr. Winters. Rebates, grants, tax credits, transferables, what is best suited that we can capture and bring you here to Minnesota to film?
I'll start. The answer is yes. You need all those. I mean, I think as a producer, you look for what's the exchange rate? What's the tax credit? Is someone else going to be investing in it from that territory? Where's the infrastructure? Do you have a crew base? You know, if I have to bring everything to Minnesota, that makes it less likely that I'm going to come. But if you already have Grips electricians, you've got an art department, you've got folks who work in the movie business and have experience that can contribute to the picture, and then I can hire locals, that's much more attractive than if, you know, there's some places in Canada where there's a 65% rebate. That doesn't mean anything. There's nobody there. So if I have to bring everything, if they've got one dolly, if they've got just a little bit of stuff there, it doesn't help me. I'm bringing everything and putting everybody up. Where's my economic benefit for, you know, there's nobody in Winnipeg. So I think that it's a combination of those things. You have to have a combination of those, and the combination is what attracts studio investment and distributors and financial investors in indies.
And I'll just add one little piece to that by saying there are incentives, and then there is what we're proposing, which is not an incentive. The incentives are great. As Ralph said, you need all of the above. AMP is actually going out and getting the project. If you sit as a state and wait to see who comes to the door with your incentive, you will get what you get. AMP actually goes out and identifies those projects and gets them in a stage where they're looking for the last piece of financing, and they go, sure, we could shoot that in Minnesota. Why not? And there is infrastructure here. There's 30 years of infrastructure in crews and so on. So the things that Ralph was talking about exist. What's missing is actually somebody going and knowing about that project. And, of course, this is what we do every day. We look at projects all the time in Los Angeles, and we know that a project has, you know, all of these elements and missing the last piece of financing.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up.
Okay.
Yeah, I did bring my headshot just in case.
You know?
Later.
You only brought one?
A dozen more at my office.
All right.
Okay. Representative Pazman.
Well, I did ask two questions, but I don't think they were given the opportunity to answer the two questions I asked.
Okay. Remind them again.
What revenue funds the base budget for your nonprofit?
It would be part of the legacy funding.
So we would be funding your base budget.
Yes.
And then which state does this?
None.
Minnesota would be the first in the U.S.
Madam Chairman.
Okay. Still around the world.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Warner, just a quick question. Obviously, this is predicated upon the potential of a return on investment. So who would determine in terms of the production company, the studio, whatever, not the gross revenues, but whether or not a profit's been made on the movie?
Well, I think
or is it based on gross revenues?
I think what you'd want to do is make that part of your investment decision by that group. You'd set that criteria up so that, you know, as an investor in the movie, that you would participate in the waterfall just like any other investor. So you want to be people that are first out in terms of that. After the distribution expenses, you want to be at the top of the waterfall. And so I think that's part of what you would want to negotiate before you make that investment.
Okay.
But I think that's transparent, and I think that's just – you know, being smart about which movies you put the money into.
Okay. I'll add to that that includes the right to audit.
Yes.
Senator
Cullen, you can be chairman.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to make a comment for just a minute because I know we want to get to the film board folks. Because I find myself at kind of an interesting intersection with this hearing. You and I were the folks, as I recall, when as a member of your division, the old State Department's division, where we put together the film board originally.
Just remember, everybody, I trained him.
Yeah, so. That's correct. That is absolutely correct, as I often say.
We need to talk.
And the legacy money was put together in the Senate Finance Committee. And in particular, the Arts and Cultural Fund was something that I came up with. And what was contemplated when we were doing this in Senate Finance in 2005, 2006, 2007 was that it was going to be used for a fairly narrow group of recipients. As Ms. Mitchell pointed out, we've got $57 million for the first year of the biennium available, or roughly $57 million available the first year of the biennium. What was anticipated when this thing was put together was the Arts Board, the Regional Arts Councils, that's about 1,200 arts organizations in the state, Humanities Commission, Public Broadcasting, Historical Society. We now have libraries, county fairs, wherever that came from. We have civics. We have all sorts of stuff. So what the mistake I made with this fund was that I think the final legislative passage was February of 2008. I did not anticipate the credit collapse of September 2008, and that this particular fund would be viewed as the only free money in town. And it's so, Madam Chair, it's something we're going to have to be a little bit careful about in terms of determining what's appropriate for the general fund, what's appropriate for the legacy fund. It will not be easy.
I agree. Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just real quickly, and I apologize for stepping out, and you may have talked about this, but how long does it take to produce a film like one of the films that you produced, one of the big-name films, the Well, on Star Trek 5. So I have them all. I'm just wondering.
on a large film from idea to actually in the theater, you know, it could be a two-year process. It depends on how big, how complex, you know. In putting it together, it could take, you know, 6 months of writing a script and finding the right talent and putting that together. Take another 3 or 4 months of preparation, 3 or 4 months of shooting, 6 months of post-production. So it can easily add up to 2 years on a movie that's costing $30, $50, $100 million. It's a big enterprise. It's a big venture. Smaller movies can take just as long, but smaller movies can go faster because, you know, a $2 million movie with a good screenplay, you can mount that movie in 2 or 3 months, you can shoot it in a month, and you can do post-production in 3 or 4 months. So it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. There's a lot of moving pieces. It depends on the property. There's a lot of moving parts.
Thank you.
Okay. I know we don't have enough time at all for all of these things, but we would like to move to at least start with the film board and their people. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Senator Cohen.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, particularly out of town.
We're here all week.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. Lucinda Winter. Okay. I'm sorry. We'll try to go a little bit over time, too, but we're also certain that we'll be able to have you back again.
Absolutely, so. And thank you very much. I wanted to start by thanking both chairs and the committee for just an opportunity to bounce some ideas around about the ways that Legacy might be used to support the film community here and to bring more film into Minnesota. With me today are Andy Oz on my right, and Andy Oz is an owner of a company called Committee Films, and they're located in Eden Prairie. They're making television. Are you in Chaska?
We're moving to Eden Prairie. Okay.
Buying a building in Eden Prairie, which is good news for everybody. And Andy's going to talk a little bit about how the legacy funds have been instrumental in building their business. And also with me today is Sean Lawrence Otto, who is an author, screenwriter, filmmaker. And he's going to talk a bit about a project that he is working on for Minnesota that, those funds are instrumental.
Madam Chair, just before Ms. Winter starts, just a quick comment. We've had a chance, probably most of us, to listen to Mr. Otto's spouse. but Mr. Otto is probably, I don't know if he's the only Academy Award nominee in the room or not, but possibly.
So you could clear that up for us. I'm certainly not one.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea. No.
Yeah.
I need to explain that. Okay. Mr. Otto was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay for House of Sand and Fog about 8 years ago. Is that correct?
No, I'm sorry, Senator. I appreciate the upgrade, but there was the movie itself was nominated for 3 Oscars, but Best Adapted Screenplay turned out not to be one of them.
Oh, well, that's close. That's closer than the rest of us get.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
I thought for sure you'd been nominated.
Oh, okay. And Ms. Winters.
Senator Cohen, I would like to comment that the first Academy Award given for Best Supporting Actress was in 1929, and it was Gail Zondergaard from Litchfield.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, the Best Picture in 1929 starred Richard Arlen from St. Paul.
Well, some of us are really outclassed here. But, you know, I know this is a legacy committee, too, but Ms. Winters, I think you ought to say something, at least a mention of your general fund program,
of course,
too, because they have to everything eventually is going to have to fit together. So I know, you know, we're not the judges of that, but it would be good if you told us a little bit about that, too. Just keep going the way you want.
Sure, absolutely. Madam Chair and Chair Cohen, and members, I think the value we bring here is just to kind of tee up, okay, where are we right now in the state? And I'm going to be really, really brief. And as I said, we are happy to provide more information of any sort to members of the committee who want to dig into it more. But I just want to set the stage by doing really a brief overview. Minnesota is, you know, we sit in the prairie in the very middle of the country, but I'm happy to say, first in many ways in the area of film and television. We're the only state film commission in the country that's a public-private partnership, 501c3. We've been around for 30 years, and We are required to match our state appropriation, which is from the general fund, every year with private dollars, which makes us a little bit more entrepreneurial as a film commission than those that report to a governor or prime minister or to the king in the Saudi Republic. We are a confederate, though, of really film commissions from around the world, and everything that the previous testifier said is true. This is a global business, and we are competing every day with all the states in this country and all the countries in the world. It's truly and the digitizing and of technology and the smaller cameras only that make that more true. Production is occurring every day all over the world, and people are putting cameras in their carry-on and going forth and making things you see on screens every day. We're also the first state in the United States, and this is interesting, to offer an incentive. And that was it was known as Snowbait. It is a rebate as opposed to a tax credit, whether transferable or refundable or non-refundable. It is a check that's provided to a production that has been certified before they began producing, shooting. And no reimbursement occurs until after the economic activity occurs and the cost they spend in Minnesota has been verified. So it's a true rebate, it's very similar to consumer rebates that way, although there's a lot of verification that goes on before any reimbursement is made. In 1997, when Snowbait was first funded, was the same year Canada came on board, as the previous testifier said, with some very aggressive national and provincial incentives, and then the whole world started moving towards incentives. Today, there are 9 states in the country that do not offer incentives. The other 41 do, and we are being outclassed and outspent by all of those states, even Arkansas. We have, as the previous testifier said, an infrastructure here, an amazing talent pool. We're in the middle of the United States, which in some ways is an advantage because it's easy to get from Minnesota to either coast, to Toronto, to Montreal, to Vancouver. So it's easy to get here, and it's easy to get out. We have an airport that other cities are envious of. We have not been, even in its best day, between 2007 and 2011, the state invested about $4 million taxpayer dollars from the general fund in Snowbait. And from that, the return was about $30 million in expenditures into the state. So that's a return on investment of about 7-1, which is really pretty good. Our cost per job is also very low at between $8,000 and $9,000. And then there's all the private activity that occurs with hotels and all the things that you've heard about already. Everybody comes and spends because they need absolutely everything you can imagine to make a movie or a TV show or a commercial happen. So why is it that we are, as Jane mentioned, the previous testifier, why are we working with what's now called microfilms, small budget films? Because we don't have the incentive dollars that are what I call the red crayon. They're what everybody wants. If you do not have an incentive in the form of a rebate or a tax credit, you are just not in the game. It's like trying to attract convention business without having, you know, a convention center. It's impossible. So we are working with people there's indigenous production here, there's commercials being made here, there are TV shows being made here. Andy will tell you about that. We have a pretty serious national cable segment here of 30, 40 shows that are being made. There is activity that goes on here, but to attract the kinds of television stars or films, television shows that attract, that have the Kevin Bacons or the Glenn Closes of the world, you have to have an incentive. To attract features, the kind that Ralph Winter works on, you have to have a really serious incentive. We have never had the funding pool to attract those films, nor the percentage to attract those films. So this year, we do have a bill. Senate and House Companion have been introduced. Our Senate bill has started moving through committee. It's for a $10 million general fund appropriation for Snowbait and an increase in our percentage to 25%. It also changes a little bit of the language about above-the-line talent, which would be your star talent, to allow some reimbursement of that talent, even though they're not Minnesotans. And the reason for that, again, is just to make us a little more competitive. If you want a TV show, and I happen to be a fan right now of The Followers, or The Following,
If you want Kevin Bacon here, you're going to have to reimburse a little bit of that salary. And the good news there is that salary goes is taxable dollars. So their income taxes on that salary are coming right in here. So when, and I also agree with the previous testifiers that the linchpin here is an incentive. And were there to be a loan fund or investment fund, whether it's from wherever it comes from, legacy dollars, general fund dollars, that would make us stand apart and have an edge on other players in the marketplace. But the linchpin is still the incentive. So that's why we are asking for this. We've introduced this bill and are looking for support for that bill. But so now we'll just focus on legacy. And that's where my testifiers come in. Since 2011, when general fund dollars went away for snowbait during the dark hours of the recession, there was enough support for the program here at the Capitol that there was $1 million provided to us through the legacy fund, and the language was provided so that snowbait was allowed to operate through legacy. So we had $1 million that came in 2012 and a supplemental $600,000 that came in 2013. And I can tell you very briefly what we've done with that money. About half of it, $600,000, a little less than half, has gone to snowbait, and it has funded 6 projects. 2 of them are feature films. There has been a TV pilot, a documentary, and post-production on a TV show. We have a very vibrant post-production community here. Those are bricks and mortar buildings with people who come in every day and do sound design and editing and animation. And those are the wages and salaries there are really attractive, and thus the income taxes that go from there. The rest of the money has gone to 2 legacy grant programs. So these are, and by the way, we narrowed the focus of snowbait because we're getting it through legacy to make it consistent with the principles and guidelines for legacy arts and cultural heritage spending. So we have given the greatest percentage to productions that are about Minnesota, where you're hiring the more Minnesotans you hire, the better. We've tried to make it align very closely with legacy principles. We wouldn't have to do that were this in general fund dollars. Then you can attract production from all over without those constraints. Our Locke Filmmaker Grant Fund, which was made with the $600,000 in supplemental funds, has been now 3 grants have been awarded of $175,000 each to filmmakers in Minnesota. I believe everybody in the Legacy Committee just recently got a media release to that effect. And he's not here to talk about it, David. Andy Oz and several other Minnesotans have put together a children's feature movie called Lawnmower Mafia, and they're the recipients of one of those grants. So we are working that. We have another grant going up in about a month and a half that will be a finishing fund. So we are working those legacy funds for grants for Minnesota filmmakers. Our ask through legacy this year, which I submitted yesterday, is for we were at 1.6. We are asking for $2 million in the coming biennium for legacy funds. And with that, we would like to do a production grant or grants. A finishing grant that's helping a film finish, get the last dollars to help them finish. A youth and emerging media artist grant, working with people who are less experienced but have a story to tell and have demonstrated the ability to get it made. And a minority and new immigrant filmmaker grant, which would be directed towards new immigrants in Minnesota and minorities, and we would do a lot of outreach to those communities to make sure they know about the opportunity for these grants. We have a very strong Hmong filmmaking community here in the metropolitan area. We also have a lot of new Somali immigrants, and they have stories they want to tell on film too, and we'd like to support that. So that's the short version of my story, and now I'd just like to turn it over to Andy Oz and just identify yourself.
Hi, I'm Andy Oz. Thank you to the committee for letting me speak. I own a company called Committee Films. We work on lots of television commercials and advertising work in the Twin Cities, but we also do television. And we've produced television shows and documentaries for the History Channel, National Geographic, Nova, and are currently doing a series for the History Channel's sister network, H2, called America Unearthed, which is the number one show on that network right now. We've been the recipient of a Snowbait money refund money three times, and it's been instrumental in the growth of our company. 4 years ago, we were two people working out of my basement. The year after that, after our first Snowbait, we were four people working in a tiny little office. Now we're 17 people working in that same tiny little office, and we're in the process of buying a building in Eden Prairie where we'll be moving to this summer. Our show was recently renewed for a second season, and we've also been commissioned by the History Channel to develop two new series, which would be filmed and edited and all of the post-production in completely in Minnesota, which would generate several jobs and bring close to $8 million to this state, and 100% of it would be spent within this state if that happened. And we fully intend to apply for more Snowbait money to help us get those series off the ground, because having that extra money to help you get your pilot started and knock that thing out of the park is what's going to help land the series.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. And now Sean Lawrence Otto, and do you want to talk a little bit about the project you're working on?
Madam Chair, members. Nice to see everyone. My name is Sean Lawrence Otto. I am, as the director of the Film Board said, a local filmmaker, screenwriter, director, author, former entrepreneur. And I'm supportive of the Film Board. I'm here to talk about the Film Board. And Lucinda asked me specifically to talk about a project that we are developing right now that we are having a very difficult time convincing our financiers to shoot in Minnesota. Just as an example of what it is like for Minnesota-based filmmakers and why there are very few of us left that work here. My partner in this project is Christine Walker, who's produced six films in Minnesota. And we are right now going to be going to Los Angeles on Tuesday to meet with our financiers to try to convince them that we should shoot in Minnesota and not in Louisiana. And this is a film that I wrote and I'm going to direct that is about Minnesota culture, that features wild rice. Where else can you get wild rice? It doesn't grow in Louisiana. And I thought that was a pretty good guarantee that I'd
be
able to...
That's
got
to be the problem with that Canada.
Yeah, I know. Yes, there is rice in Ontario, that's for sure. And Michigan, believe me, we've checked out the other possible places. But what it comes down to really is incentive and incentive dollars. In our experience, what financiers look at, the one thing that they look at, they don't even look at net dollars so much as they look at percentages. And Minnesota used to be fourth in production in the United States between New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. We were the first film incentive program. Now we are 41st out of 41 film incentive programs in terms of the amount of production that we attract. And that's because we're also the lowest reimbursing film incentive program at 15% and 20%. Louisiana is at 30%, and that applies almost across the board to above the line talent, meaning the actors as well. And it also, if you hire a New Orleans resident, you get an additional 5%. So in our movie, which is about, including financing costs, it's about a $6.8 million movie. Once we include Snowbait, in the event that it is fully funded, we are still significantly short. To overcome some of that deficit, we went up and we met with Commissioner Sertich at the IRRB. And talked about perhaps filming on the Iron Range, since a good deal of Minnesota's wild rice actually is on the Iron Range. And they met and unanimously doubled their incentive to 20%. We thought perhaps that would make us competitive, but as it turns out, that only applies to the percent that we spend on the range. So all of these percentages break down, and they sound sometimes like more than they are. 20% on a $6 million movie actually would get us a net incentive of about $263,000, because we'd be spending about a little over $1 million on the range. So we are, at this point in time, even with that incentive, down by about $619,000. That's a very difficult argument to make to a financier who's putting up the money and asking, why should I finance a movie and take on that additional risk that I have to work that much harder to overcome that investment when you can rewrite your script and instead of wild rice, make it shrimp or something like that. I don't want to do that. You know, I live here. I wrote this to work here to help create the film industry or revitalize some of the film industry here. This is 90 jobs. That's why I'm here to support the film board and the idea of Snowbait and the idea of increasing that incentive to make it competitive. I don't, in principle, myself personally, even like the idea of incentives in general in a pure world. But we don't live in that kind of world. We live in a world where states are competing with one another and with other countries, and our only choice is to participate or not. And at this point in time, I'd like to make it here. So I'm encouraging you to support the film board's activities.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Your chair. Start.
Oh, okay. All right. Ms. Winters, putting aside what the kind of program is, whether it's a general fund appropriation, the investment plan, tax credits, if we were to look at a $10 million figure as you've requested, I've heard estimates of anywhere from, in terms of establishing a film industry again in Minnesota, anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 full-time positions or close thereto. What is your guess?
Chair Cohen, are you asking me how many it would create?
If we were to have an ongoing, as we had in the 1990s, if we were to have an ongoing film industry again in Minnesota, what would you estimate the number of film industry employees to be who'd be here on basically a full-time basis?
Well, currently, from the current, every year we pull statistics. We have a public policy researcher pull statistics, and we pull them for industry code 5121, motion picture and sound recording, which is what most film commissions use to look at their economic picture. And right now, there are about 3,800 people who claim on their taxes that this is the industry that they work in. So that is down significantly from about more than 5,000 10 years ago. So if you're asking me what would happen with $10 million, is that what you're asking
yeah.
me? The projections that we have on $10 million are an additional 1,200 jobs, full-time.
So you'd have about 5,000 full-time employees in the state if
it would increase it by, and we just took our numbers we have from the Snowbait, we know those numbers, 4 million and 28 million. We know how many full-time jobs we've created with that money, and then we projected that up to 10 million, and we came out at 1,200 jobs. So we do have some history from which to make that projection.
And how many of those positions, if you could hazard a guess, would be union positions?
That's a tougher call for me to make. That's something I could noodle on for you, but I wouldn't want to make a guess.
Other questions for members of the film board? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the film board. What is your percentage of admin? Let's say you had the $10 million
right.
for grants, and
right.
What percentage is used for admin?
Yeah, as currently written, the statute allows for the languages up to 5% is allowable for administration, and in that would be marketing. Obviously, marketing would be included in that to get the word out. That's the current language, and that's been in the statute since 1997.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. And I just like to thank you for carrying the banner over the years on this. I know sometimes it's been pretty hard. And if I miss this, please excuse me, but what is, to your recollection, either Ms. Winter, during your tenure or actually, when did you start? I'll ask that.
I started in November of 2005.
Thank you, Ms. Winter.
November 5, actually, to be really exact about it. I do still remember that. So,
what is the most money that you've received for Snowbait since your time? And do you remember, was there a higher amount previously?
When the first time we received Snowbait funds after the hiatus was in fiscal year 2007. In that year, we received 1.7. And the following biennium, we received 2.5. So 2008-09, we received $2.5 million, and that was the largest appropriation since I've been in the chair.
Okay, well, thank you for the work you've been doing with not a large fund. When they started, do you recall in 1990, was it 1995?
In the 97.
What was the first?
So it was 1997 for, civilians, but for the legislature's fiscal year 98. And it was a very modest program. It was 5% up to 100,000, and then it went to 10%. And by the time the funding was lost in 2002, they had expanded it from films to films and TV shows and MORs, made for TV movies. Movies of the Week was called MOWs. And it remained at 10%. So when I first wandered into the Capitol and tried to figure out how to get an appropriation for Snowbait, there were none when I came into my office. It was 10%, then we jumped it to 15, and then we jumped it to 15 to 20, and we've always just, in 2005, that wasn't too bad, but there have been dramatic changes in the middle of the 2000s till now in what states are offering and countries are offering. Canada has always had a very attractive provincial and national commitment to building an industry with a full range of incentives and loan programs. And I mean, they have an amazing program, and they've been able to attract and really make production centers out of Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal is well known for animation. So they have done very well. It's become very competitive, and it's also very attractive because the money comes in, as soon as you put up an incentive and start making calls, you have production in your door.
Senator Cohen, thank you, Ms. Winter, for your work. And I just, quick aside, I can remember a film made in the late 1980s set in Wilmer, Minnesota, just south of where I was teaching, that was made in Canada.
Okay, we do thank you very much, and
thank you.
Apologize for cutting everybody short, but we do want to turn to Representative McDonald, who has two witnesses.
Yes,
sure.
And Madam Chair, the hope is that
thank you.
With some of these folks, whether it be in my committee or Senator Tomasoni's committee, we'll have a chance to have a more lengthy discussion.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry that we gave the advantage to the out-of-town people. Okay. Representative McDonald, are you going to introduce?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'd like to introduce two friends of mine who work in the film industry, Ann Healy Shapiro and Andrew Peterson. The third witness, Milo Durbin, is a businessman, a grip. He's lives in Delano, worked on many films. These good folks know him. He's, thanks be to God, he found a job today. He got hired to do some work in the film industry, so he couldn't be with us today.
Okay.
Yes. So I'll turn it over back to you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Andrew Peterson. I'm currently the Executive Director of the Independent Filmmaker Project, Minnesota. Prior to that, I spent 4 years as the Vice President of Production for Work, Work, Works, which was a independent finance and production company based in Minnesota. We made films between $3 and $5 million, including Thin Ice, which shot in Hopkins. Our other films shot in other states due to tax incentives and primarily. But prior to that, I was Director of Production for the Minnesota Film Board. And I have worked in film for most of the last 24 years. I'm here today to primarily speak about tax incentives. There are different types, and I don't want to get into the details of those. There are rebates, refundable credits, transferable credits. But the bottom line is tax credits work, and it is what drives the film industry. Accountants really rule the day right now and decide where films shoot. And as you heard before, they can tell you to change it from rice to shrimp, and they'll do that. And it's happened many times.
John told us he wouldn't do it.
He better not. But at some point, he may not have a choice. If the investor says it must be Louisiana, you know, you find a way to make it work. Hopefully, we all keep our fingers crossed he'll shoot here because it's a great project. The other thing that's really interesting about tax incentives, just as an overview, is that whether it's a red state or a blue state, they're there. They've been there for a long time. They've been there long enough where there are studies that you can access, one by Ernst & Young, that analyze these things and show them to be revenue neutral or very close to revenue neutral. With that as a great starting point, then you look at the return of investment, which is between 5-to-1 and 7-to-1. So money just comes in. As I've said before, the film industry is an ATM that comes to town. It is not a stadium and it's not a mall. For 3 to 5 months, it comes to town and does nothing but spend money. It will when we shot Thin Ice here, that was 2008 in a tough economy. We went into Hopkins. We rented vacant warehouse space from people who couldn't rent it. We rented office equipment. The infrastructure of the film, buying wardrobe and production design. We hire as crew members EMTs. Union drivers. We work with IA, Teamsters. And I can answer that. I'd say, on film crews, a minimum of 50% on a union crew are union positions in those categories. And a lot of the other ones that aren't are in the process of joining the union. So there's a strong union backing. The good thing also about tax incentives is that they've been around long enough where they really have shaken out, and there is a formula that's out there and verifiable about what works. It really comes to about 25-35% as a credit to make you competitive. And what Minnesota has that no other state has is that we had a running start. In the 90s, we were the game. We were fourth in the country, and to be fourth just behind New York, Chicago, and L.A. was saying something. And at that time, Massachusetts wasn't in the game. In the advent of tax incentives, we have now gone to last, and they are making $1 billion in tax. And people don't – I know for a fact people do not like to work in Massachusetts, but they are told to go there because that's where the incentives are. It's easier – if you compare the two states, it's much easier to work in Minneapolis and St. Paul to compare cities to Boston. We offer a variety of locations, rural to suburban to urban, within a union work zone of the city that other places don't have. We offer a great crew and an infrastructure that's already here with equipment and resources. The thing that was so great in the 90s is that when we had all those things, the first time Hollywood came here, they fell in love and they came back again and again. We've seen it. It'll happen again. It's all here. There's an industry that's really hurting and has shrunk, and we've lost a lot of creative people. Where I work at IFP Minnesota, we have an education program, and it has been around for 25 years. Jane's done a great job with that, and it is... we're training people, and then when they're out on the other side, just as they are at MCAT and MCTC, they have to have a choice. Do I stay here and struggle, or do I move somewhere where there's work? And when I was at WorkWorks, 5 of my interns, they were fantastic kids that had great futures in films. They're all somewhere else. We're losing creative capital. And that's a big deal for me when I look at this. A lot of people say, we're just sending money to Hollywood. And that's a half-truth. It is Hollywood comes and in a 3 to 5 months period will spend $10 million and inject that directly into the local economy. And within that and in order to do that, they require an incentive. And that incentive, for the most part, proves to be revenue neutral. So it's just millions of dollars coming into an economy. And I can say when we shot in Hopkins in that winter of 2008, some businesses made it through that winter because of the business we gave them. Restaurants, bars. Bars always get a good job from filmmakers, hotels. But I don't know of any other businesses that really spread the money around as widely as film does. We're at dry cleaners. We're at, we're at the places you expect us, like at hotels and restaurants, spending money there. But we're in secondhand stores buying wardrobe. We're paying people to fabricate new props and equipment. We're hiring a diverse group of people on our crews. It's not just scripts and gaffers, those those funny names that you hear about. It's also EMTs, because we operate safely and under guidelines, and we hire, there's an EMT on set mostly every day. There are, you know, there are people are being trained into new jobs, and several states will have training clauses in their incentive that triggers it, so that there are people that are being trained in, that you're always bringing new people into the industry, and that's easy. We've got a huge base of people eager to get into this industry. It's an immediate industry. When a film comes to town, it is just it stocks up, and you know, with the money starts being spent on day one, before day one, before they get here, money is being spent. There is a short history of incentives, just because it's like, why incentives? You know, why do we give incentives? And in the film history, the history has been that other countries needed to counter Hollywood. So they created ones to protect their own country's film industries and have something that was not Hollywood. They didn't always have to look to us, this country, for its product. Closer to home, that started to draw some people into those countries to shoot. Canada then came into the scene and wanted business, and business fled to Canada. The U.S. was really hurting. Money was going away. So now the states brought in incentives. Business started to come back to the USA. We're in a crazy place now where California, of all places, has introduced an incentive. They have the industry there, but they feel the need for an incentive, a competitive one, to keep it. It's sort of, Minnesota really has fallen behind, and it's sad because we were number four, and if we had stayed competitive throughout, we would still be number four. We would have billions of dollars over these years in revenue that had come into the state. There would be, we have an industry I say is almost on life support. It would be thriving. And it's not going to take long for it to thrive again. This is a very fast uptick when the industry really took off in the 80s and 90s. There's a new generation of Hollywood executives that don't think about us because we're not part of the game. As soon as we are and they discover us, they'll be here doing what they did before. The big exciting thing that's happening now that has really changed in these last years, and we're ripe to take advantage of, our television series. Detroit, Boston, Atlanta, North Carolina, Salt Lake City, they all have TV series. And a key component of a tax incentive is a long-term commitment. If it comes up for renewal every 1 or 2 years, it's not going to attract a TV series. What's so great about them is, with a long-term commitment from them, you've got producers and directors and stars buying houses and paying into the tax rolls. In that way, you're also you're creating new bricks and mortar companies. The local equipment houses will hire more staff. They'll buy more equipment. Hollywood outposts, we'll have outposts here of Panavision and other companies. This has happened. This is not conjecture. This has happened in every state that has had a competitive tax incentive. If you go to North Carolina and to Michigan, these companies have all come in. It's new people to the payrolls, new people to all to the payroll taxes and the property taxes. And then on top of that, the trickle down. I think we always talk about job creation in terms of just what it is for a straight up film professional. But this is job creation across the board. This is at hotels and at service companies, it's entrepreneurial. There are businesses that can be created in this state that aren't here right now. Trucks that are used specifically for the film industry. When we shot in Utah, somebody there had bought three of those trucks because they're in Utah and qualify toward the spend that goes toward the tax incentive. Everybody uses those trucks. Somebody here, a grip, a gaffer, a driver here can buy a honey wagon and they can be in business and start up their new business. We're getting close to five, I get a feeling.
Well, I'm sorry.
Wind me up and I can go on forever. So.
No, and it's terrific. We could listen to you forever.
That's a lie.
But we would like to have Anne have a few words and, sorry.
Anne had told me just to go on, so I took her at her
entourage. No, I have a real short story. My name's Anne Haley Shapiro. I've been in this business for too long, and I've worked on a lot of movies, but not lately. And I'm a location manager, so I scout for locations, and I drive all around. And I'm usually the first one in town when I'm working on a movie, and people think I'm crazy, and they think I'm lying. And I say, oh, no, I'm working for Warner Brothers, and we're going to come here. Just wait and see. And they say, yeah, sure. So I'm driving around with my dachshund, and all of a sudden I'm spending a lot of money in the camera store. And then a couple producers come up, and then a couple actors come up, and then a couple more people come up, and then the semis come up. And all of a sudden I'm asking for 5 acres of parking lot because I've got 13 semis that I need to park every day. And then we're going to Chisholm, and we're looking at the bars in Chisholm. And you know, we own the... But then in Minnesota's case, most of that movie ends up going to New Mexico because Bill Richardson runs to Warner Brothers and says, I'll give you $1 million if you make 60% of the movie in Santa Fe. So, as Senator Tomasoni can attest to, they made Pueblo architecture work on North Country. And the poor production designer was having a heart attack because it was supposed to be Eveleth in the wintertime. And so they picked out a nice Santa Fe bar to shoot, and it was supposed to be Chisholm. Then, just to add insult to injury, they shipped a busload of guys from the Iron Range down to Santa Fe to be extras in the bar because they couldn't find anybody that looked like they were from Minnesota down there.
Senator Tomasoni, was Senator Tomasoni one of them?
No.
It's getting worse. I mean, I wasn't one of them, and they didn't shoot the bar scenes on the range. You know,
No, they loved the bars. They loved all the bars in Chisholm. But the fact that the governor in New Mexico went and lobbied Warner Brothers, and our governor did not, 75% of that movie. So instead of spending $25 million on the range, we spent three. And so, I mean, and you know, yes, we hate this, but... You know, I think that it's worth having. I mean, the people were dancing in the Iron Range just to get the $3 million. Can you imagine what they would have done if we had spent 20 there? So
we shot a film Older Than America in outside of Duluth in St. Louis County, and it was $1.5 million movie. And it was we got free hotel rooms because they recognized what we were going to do to the community. And when we were done, they offered them again because they saw what it did. It doesn't have to be a $20 million movie for it to have a significant impact in a tough spot.
Right. And if you take a $25, $30 million movie, it's $1 million on hotels and per diem. So, I mean, just think of that went every – and not just Minneapolis, but, you know, Faribault is an example of a town that's got a four-block – perfect town. It's not a building has been torn down. And if some movie came in and moved in there and started spending money, I mean, that town would be dancing. So, you know, it's not just about the money. But, you know, I since I'm out in the world, people really like having their movies shot in their neighborhoods. You really do. They think it's really great. You know, and plus, if we throw around money, that's an added
the location fees and all that. I know we're tight on time. I did want to double back on one thing. Lucinda had mentioned that a new provision in her bill was about what's called above the line, which is actors and directors and sort of the key creative people, that a portion of their salary counts toward the qualified spend. And a lot of people think of that as why. And I just wanted to quickly break that down to say if George Clooney came here and made $10 million, he has a loan out company and it's registered to do business in Minnesota. It is, it's not even necessary for it to register to do business, but sometimes they do that. The first million would qualify for the tax credit. And if it's a 25%, that's a check to them for $250,000. He's got to pay a corporate tax, which is 9.8%, I believe, on $10 million. So that's $980,000. So the state has collected $980,000 and has given him two, you know, it's a net seven. It's just this is part of how the math works all up and down. It's sort of like we are sending money to Hollywood, but we're making them spend money here first and a lot of it and leave a lot of tax dollars that at the end of the day will be revenue neutral in the right with the right formula in place. Okay. And there's a lot of background for that, and we can give it to you. Like I said, Ernst & Young has a great study, and there are models and other things that we can provide.
Okay. Well,
so it's not just my word.
Thank you all. It was all very informative.
You look honest.
And if we get the rest of our colleagues to look happily at a coalition between Tomasoni, Cohen, Kahn, Erdahl, and McDonald, we've got a lot to...
Kind
look
of waterfront.
Forward to
kind
it.
Of work cut out for us.
We're trouble back in Arkansas.
Right. But
thank
anyway,
you.
Thank you all. Thank you all for being here, and we'll be back with these subjects in both committees.
Thanks.